Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Did I reach you at home?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm here. I was going to ask you if you went anywhere nice this week.
I went to the outside and walked the
outside.
Dog.
Ah, the big room with the blue ceiling.
Uh-huh. Well, it was kind of a...
The big room with the gray ceiling.
Yeah. Or blue and white, maybe a little bit, like a G3.
Two-tone. I like that. You may know this room from the Windows 95 desktop background.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, we're allowed to move our bodies outside as long as we don't get near other people. That's what we're allowed to do in California. I woke up this morning and discovered that I made a mess of my... So when you post a story at 5:30 a.m. on Embargo, as I did this morning for the MacBook Air, you do have this moment of like, well, I got to wake up in the morning because somebody's going to point out some horrible error I've made or a typo or whatever. And in this case, it was absolutely right. I had several people say, your iPad numbers aren't right. That has to be from Geekbench 4 and not Geekbench 5. And they're totally right. And so I got a little injection of adrenaline this morning. I have so many different copies of Geekbench on so many different devices in my house right now because I don't work at Macworld and we don't have a library of devices. So I spent yesterday... like digging out, like I borrowed my daughter's MacBook. I borrowed my wife's MacBook Air. I pulled an old MacBook, my MacBook Air out and had to like get it up and running and download and you got to log in anyway. And amid all of that and the many devices, I ran the wrong app and I didn't even think about it because I was expecting the numbers to be good and they were surprisingly good, but they were too good to be true. So that chart is dead now. And it turns out the iPad Pro is only... faster than the iPad. Let me clarify here. 18 months ago's iPad Pro is merely faster than the mid-range MacBook Air configuration, the $100 upgrade MacBook Air configuration released next week, which I have now. So, you know, it's still impressive. It's just not, as Apple would say, blow away. So, yeah, I regret the error.
I looked at those numbers, and of course, I read the story before you published it, but I had no context for that. So
like, how can it be?
And the answer
is amazed. It can't be.
I was like, wow, that's really, you know,
it's good, funny. But it's not that good. No.
I mean, the multi-core is still pretty impressive.
Doesn't that processor have 8 cores? You know, 4, I don't remember because Apple keeps changing the core count and they don't emphasize the core count.
On the iPad?
Because the iPhones now have with their processor this totally different core count because they can use the efficiency cores and they can use the speed cores and it's bananas. But
the 2021s definitely have, I believe, an 8-core CPU and an 8-core GPU.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of cores, and if you can use the GPUs for some general purpose stuff,
I think it still makes the point, but it's not as dramatic, is that the state of the art for 18 months ago in a $799 iPad is faster and a lot faster on multi-core than the state of the art on next week's $100 upgraded quad-core MacBook Air. And that's it makes the point, but it's not as dramatic, which is that Apple's ARM game is super strong, and the processors they're putting in their iPads put the processors they're forced to put, for now, in their MacBook Airs to shame. That's it. That's send tweet.
Yeah, it was funny, because I went back, this stuff came out on Wednesday? Was it Wednesday morning? Wednesday morning. And I had only gotten halfway through Upgrade this week listening to that, and then listening, I caught a little bit of your appearance on the talk show. And it was funny, of course, as always, like, you know, we put our predictions and our thoughts out there in the world, and Apple quickly upends them, because you and Mike were talking about, like, the MacBook Air, the rumor that the MacBook Air was going to come with the new keyboard, like, later. And then it came, like, 2 days after that. And it's like, wow, okay, none of us really expected it to be that fast, I think. But it's funny, Jason, because this machine looks amazing, based on your review and the stuff I've been reading about it. It looks like just a great laptop. And as you know, I'm using a 2014 MacBook Air, an 11-inch model that has had some woes. And I look at this laptop and I think to myself, this is great. This is the laptop that I needed 2 months ago when I used to leave the house. I find myself in this dilemma where it's like, part of me really covets it, obviously. Like, it's the new, it's shiny, it's much better than the computer I have now. But the other part of me looks at the current situation and thinks, do I need a new laptop? And I'm not sure that I do right now. Like, if this were a thing where it's like, well, in a couple of weeks, you know, we'll go back to life as it was, and I'll be going to the coffee shop, and I'll be traveling, I don't think that's going to happen. And thus,
yeah.
Do I need a computer that I can take with me? And I don't think the answer is yes right now. So I'm not saying I won't buy this computer or that I don't have a need for it down the road, but I am saying that there's no rush for me because I can't, I don't really, like, this would be a computer I would take to the couch. And that's about it. And the answer is, I can do that with my iPad. Hell, I can do that with my MacBook Air. I just need to plug it in more frequently. And so that's, it's a weird, it's another weird impact of the changing world that we're in right now. There are certainly people out there, I'm sure, who have suddenly found themselves, for say, working at home and realized, like, their computers are old, right? Maybe they haven't used them in a long time because they were working from an office and had a computer there. And all of a sudden they're like, oh no, I have to work from home and I don't have the right hardware for that. So, you know, especially for those kinds of people, this might be a godsend, right?
That's
like,
perfect
timing.
You're in a different scenario because, you know, it's your going out. I mean, I guess also, like, I guess going to the couch or whatever, but like you're it's your going out in public device and you're not going out in public. So
I don't need that. I don't have that use case for the moment. And then when I compare that with a couple other data points, specifically things that you mentioned in your review, first of all, certainly more when I was looking at those original comparisons with the iPad. But like even now, when you look at the comparisons with the 2018 and the 2020 soon to come, you're like, do I invest in a this generation MacBook when it seems like the writing is on the wall? I know it's a long time to go, but like, again, if I don't need it now, is there a harm in waiting? And then especially when you compound it with your other point about the fact that, unlike in the past, MacBooks get discounted pretty frequently now. Like, it is not at all uncommon to see a couple $100 off. And I don't know if that will happen with the new model, but I think there already was a couple. I think I saw floating around a couple discounts already on the new models that just came out. So,
yeah, I don't know whether if they start at $999, whether we're going to see those same deals that we saw before.
But for the higher end model, there very well may be.
Maybe.
And I think I swear I saw one over on Mac Rumors today. There was already something about like, oh yes, they've discounted the 2020 models. You know, maybe the higher end models.
Yeah, but there's an argument to be made, and I think it's not entirely fair, but I think you could make it that, remember, so the MacBook Air was introduced at $1,199 and then it got cut to $1,099, but you've been able to buy it for $999, and I bought two for $999, and now it's $999. Great. But if you look, what it really is that the i3 is $999.
Right. Sure.
And the one that I tested is the $1,099, or it's actually $1,299 because it's got more storage. It's got the 512 instead of the 256, which is double the 128 that it used to be. So that's good. But like, you could argue that one of the ways that Apple has started the price at $999 now is that they are giving you a lower caliber processor in the $999.
Sure. Yeah.
The nice thing is that all of that stuff is to play for. They didn't do that bundling thing where you have to buy the high end model in order to get certain features. You can literally buy the $999 one and say, I want $100 more or $250 more processor, and they'll throw it in there.
Is exactly what I was looking at, because when I looked at the options, especially comparing to my current MacBook Air, I was like, well, I only have 256 gigabytes of storage on my current MacBook Air. I'm not even using all that because I no longer store most stuff on that computer. I store it in the cloud on my Synology or, you know, working files on my iMac. It's like, I can get by easily with 256. I don't need to go up to the 512 gig model. So I can spend that money instead on more RAM and more processor speed and still undercut, you know, a really tricked out model. So, you know, I could get by with like a $1,300 MacBook Air that's got that i5 and 16 gigabytes of RAM, but only 256 gigabytes of storage. And that's great. I love when they make it configurable like that, because it really does let you have a lot of choice and a lot of variation in what you're doing. So that certainly appeals to me. And I will know, I just looked it up. There was a deal to, you know, $50-$60 off, you know, like the new versions that just came out, including the i5. So yeah. It's like,
so they still have room to market these things.
Yeah. Like and that's like, again, I think when it comes down to it, as you point out in your article, and as we always say, if you don't need it now, there's no harm in waiting because the deal might be better.
Yeah.
If you do need it now, buy it now.
Yeah, if you need it now, buy it now. If you can wait, there'll always be something better, either a better deal or all that. And the deals, Apple, there was a period where sort of like you got the price that Apple paid. And right. You know, Apple sets a price and you pay it and that's it. And that's not the case now. There are deals for all sorts of Apple hardware. They have changed their pricing. One of the things that happened when they inflated all their prices is that they started doing more deals. They were really building more margin in so that they could do some deals and stuff. And like I said, all I had to do was wait. And I kept seeing $999 right. MacBook Air deals. And I expect the same will keep happening, where there will be deals either for, you know, sub $999 or the higher end models will be discounted. But like, it's nice. These are still the lower, you know, class of processor, but it's nice that they have those options and that you don't, you get a quad core i5 or i7 if you pay for it, and that's better. And it's better too because they're integrated graphics, and there are more, they have a term for it, but it's basically more processing units for the Intel Iris Plus, I think it is, graphics, yeah, the onboard graphics on the i5 and i7 than on the i3. So you will get better graphics performance fundamentally with the i5 and the i7. So I you know, $999 is a great price to set, but yeah, I would probably not buy that model. I would probably, I think $256 SSD is fine. I thought $128 you could get away with it, but $256 is fine.
It's more than enough for me.
I would probably spend $100 on the i5 model though.
Yeah, I would at least, I mean, my 2014 model is an i7. So, because I, you know, spent the extra money to get it juiced up, and it's helped it last longer, certainly. I don't know that I need an i7 on the go these days, just because most of the stuff I'm doing is not terribly intensive, with the exception of occasionally editing a podcast when I'm on the road.
Yeah.
Which I can do on an iPad too.
I can do that on my 2013 MacBook Air, which is which is now quite a bit slower than modern models, even though it's an i7. So
anything would be an upgrade there. And you know, certainly I think that model only has, my 2014 only has 8 gigs of RAM too. So throw another 8 gigs of RAM in there, and sure, why not?
Keyboard's nice. Keyboard's nice.
My current one's got current old one, keyboard. Yeah. So, the nice keyboard.
I know.
So, yeah,
your problem is that it's old and the battery is dead and weird.
Two months ago, Jason, I would have bought this immediately.
Yeah.
No, maybe even a month ago, but here's where we are.
Keep an eye out and you'll see.
I'm going to be watching. I mean, I don't, like you said, I think I'm not in a position where I feel like I necessarily want to wait for the rumored ARM transition, because you don't know when that's going to be. You don't know when it'll get to this model. You don't know what that model will look like. There are kinks to work out. The software's going to get transitioned.
Along with the broken chart that's now fixed, the other thing that's in that story that at the end there is exactly that, which is, ARM performance looks to be good. Not as good as originally I thought, but it looks to be good. And the fact that the old iPad is so much faster at multi-core than the $100, like that's same processor as in the smaller iPad Pro. That's a 18-month-old $799 iPad. And I'll grant you, you have to buy your own keyboard and stuff for that, and that will up the price. But like, ARM is ahead. Apple's ARM game is strong. And this is the one they're choosing to put in the iPad Pro. Maybe there's the new chip that's in the new iPad Pro, and then who knows if that's the chip that they would put in an ARM Mac or another one. But yes, exactly what you said. Everything else, like, it's a chip transition. Will the old software work? Will it be slow? When will new stuff come over? Will there be bugs? Is it going to be really weird for a while? It's going to be the first generation on, I don't know if you remember from the Intel transition, first generation of the Core before they went to Core Duo, where it was like Core, there was the Core Solo with one Core, and there was Core Duo, but it was the Core 2 Duo that really kind of made it fly. And so even though the Intel Core processor, Core Solo and Core Duo were better than what had come on PowerPC, they were not, in hindsight, they were really bad. compared to that next generation of Intel processors that went in there. So who's to say? Again, I don't think Apple's going to put a really bad chip in an ARM thing, but like it's a transition. And there's learn a lot of things unknowns. And so, yeah, I think you can't be like, yeah, but I don't need to buy this because in 6 months there'll be an ARM MacBook. It's like, well, it probably won't be 6 months. And who knows what that will be and what all the complications. Do you really want that? Do you want to be on the bleeding edge of a chip transition with the laptop you're going to use and then use it presumably for a few years while they fix it all except for you because you're using the first one out of the gate? Yeah. Like,
well, and the other wrinkle in that is, of course, the other announcement this week about the iPad Pro revision and the new keyboard, right? Like, you not only stacking up processor stuff, but, like, you know, I stacked up the price because I was curious. I was like, all right, if I bought, you know, an 11-inch iPad Pro with roughly the same amount of storage and a keyboard, it comes pretty close, right? Like, it's still cheaper than a MacBook that I've, you know, configured the way I want.
Sure.
And then you're like, well, okay, especially given the whole thing, as we've all discussed, you know, and I think you've championed this idea that, like, you know, an iPad Pro might be a potential dev kit for a Mac, an ARM Mac, right? And it's like, well, I would love to play around with that. And that seems more interesting way to sacrifice my iPad Pro because I've already got an iPad Pro. You know, it's just an older model. And just playing around with the cursor support and all of that, it's like, wow, do I need a portable Mac? Like, I really love the Mac OS, and I would certainly, there are many instances in which I prefer it. But given how much more capable the iPad line is becoming and stands to become, you know, the calculus changes a little bit. And especially, John Gruber made a great point this morning in a little blurb he wrote about that Apple ad that came out about how to use your computer. And he pointed out that this is great. It's a really nice ad. You know, it's well put together. And it's sort of all about defining the conventions of a computer. But he's like, it's a little weird to put that out when you've just released
a computer,
your new best laptop, and you're kind of slagging it, right? Like, at the same time. And, you know, again, you feel like, is there writing on the wall for this kind of thing? I don't know.
I don't believe that, because I think the point of that ad is to say, maybe you don't need a computer. Like,
it's not intentional that they're slagging it, but it feels like, I'm not saying their intent is that. I'm just saying that you could read it as that, and it's like, yeah, do I need a computer, right? Like, or
that's true. I mean, because they're in the business of selling you a thing. And also the replacement for that thing. And some people don't want the replacement, but other people... I mean, I do believe that Apple does fundamentally believe that the iPad is a better choice for a lot of people. But, you know, and that the Mac is appealing to people who kind of want it the way they want it. They want it to use it the classic way. The garbage truck is here, by the way.
Hello, garbage truck.
It's very exciting. But yeah, I mean... You bring up a point that is sort of the point that I have been dealing with for the last few years, which is I reached a point where I realized that my iPad was not negotiable. I was always going to bring my iPad, and that bringing an iPad and a laptop was a bit much, and that and that led me down the path of, do I really need to bring the laptop? And I think it's worth, everybody's going to have a different answer to this, but I do think the more capable the iPad becomes, the more people will ask that question of, oh, should I maybe just use the iPad and bring along a keyboard or whatever, you know, or keyboard and trackpad or whatever it is, like, instead of buying a whole other, you know, mobile computer? Is the iPad enough to do that? And some cases, no, but I think increasingly number of cases and use cases, yes. And that's the great thing about the iPad that, you know, crystallized for me when I was writing that piece last week, I think, for Macworld, which is, like, the great thing about the iPad is that it's whatever you want it to be in the moment, and then you can go back to it just being a touch tablet when you're done. And, you know, there's appeal in that, to sort of, like, you bring the pieces together and use them when you need to. Like, most of the time, as much as I talk about iPad keyboards, like, my iPad doesn't have a keyboard attached to it 95% of the time, 98% of the time. Only when I need a keyboard, and the rest of the time it doesn't. Whereas my MacBook Air, when I was using that all the time to look at web pages and read articles and stream video and all that, the keyboard can't go away. It's stuck there. So,
sure.
I don't know. It's okay for a company to make two different products for two different classes of user.
Sure,
but,
yeah.
But it is a little weird when you have that moment of like, but which one am I?
Right. And just, we're in this transition period now, even if it hasn't really been announced yet. I think, you know, so much hinges on this year's WWDC. And I think part of me feels like, well, if I'm not traveling in the next 3 months, and I'm not going really anywhere else, I can afford to wait, and I can sort of, you know, at that point, make a more informed decision. That's just what it comes down to me. I think also part of it, you know, not to verge too much into the real world, but like part of it is also the responsibility of feeling like, do I need to spend $1,300 on something right now? Like, maybe I should save that money just for the moment.
Yeah.
And make a more informed decision a couple months down the road. Maybe this is not the time to be making those kinds of purchases.
Yeah. Yep.
So I think I'm waiting and I'm sad because it's the computer I want and I would have bought it if it had been 2 months ago. And right now I feel like I cannot justify this. So I'll hold off for the moment.
So I know that you've talked about, you know, going to the cafe, and again, who knows when that's ever going to happen again, and writing. I do think the iPad, like this new, so the big thing that happened this week is that the iPad cursor stuff is real. Like, the new hardware, but like the other big thing was that the iPad cursor stuff is totally real, and it's in the beta that, or the GM that went up on Monday and will ship next week of iOS or iPad OS 13.4. And it is, what's funny about it is that it is beyond my expectations of what I thought we would get maybe if we were lucky this fall in iPad OS 14.
Yeah.
And it's here now, which it just blows me away. So in the background, they have been working on proper external pointing device support for the iPad, and it's really good. And I think it's going to change how people use the iPad in the long run to again, give you another mode. It's not going to be mandatory, but it gives you another mode that if you dock an iPad, ultimately, it's not in this version, but ultimately, you're going to be able to dock an iPad to a big screen and sit at a desk and drive all your apps because keyboard and mouse.
It's so first of all, it's very Apple-like. Like the way that you sit down and you start, when you see the demo and you start using it, you feel to yourself like, yeah, okay, they spent a lot of time on this. Like that feels very Apple-like to me in the way they're like, we have to address a problem that is not solved by slapping a mouse cursor.
Yeah,
in
the floating
software.
Invisible finger. And it's so that's big. And I would say I think it changes the interaction for a lot of different scenarios, and it opens the door to a bigger iPad, and it opens the door to an iPad OS laptop if they wanted to do that. Like, it opens the door to all those things now. But what I was going to say is, for writers, for people who are writing and editing text like you and me, I think it is a huge step forward, because the text editing cursor was only in software keyboard mode, and the last thing anybody who wants to write on the iPad wants to do is use the software keyboard.
Yeah.
So to bring the ability to be in full-on text editing mode with a keyboard and a trackpad, let's say, and being able to select text and move it around and all of that, like, that's all there. It's just there now. Yeah. And if the app supports it, which, like, Pages doesn't yet, that update isn't out yet. Yeah. You have to use like the stock. You either have to update your app if you're a developer, or you have to be using the stock thing where it just sort of picks it up. So like OneWriter I was using this week, and it does it. It works fine in there, and you get the cursor. And it's just, in the long run, as developers adopt it too, because there's additional things they can do, it's going to get better. So that's a real happy thing that they kept that a secret, first off, which is delightful, and that they shipped it now in the middle of the cycle, or at the end really of the 13 cycle, is delightful. I think because they, you know, withheld it because they wanted to make this big announcement, and then unfortunately that keyboard originally was not supposed to ship in May, right?
Time. Yeah, why would you ship it a month before WWDC? That's just weird.
Yeah, they just and I suspect it'll be constrained. Boy, I really want to see that thing. It's gonna be super. It's super expensive. People are kind of writing off companies like Bridge, who make other keyboards for the iPad, and it's like, you know, that's going to be the Cadillac that thing, but like it's like $300.
Yep.
So there's going to be room for other products that have trackpads and keyboards that are going to be cheaper. And people think about that bridge thing as like, oh, it's so heavy and expensive and all that. It's like, it's not. It's always been cheaper than the smart keyboard, and it'll be way cheaper than this thing. So there's room for others. And then, you know, you can just, you know, put it in a stand and have a keyboard and a Magic. The Magic trackpad didn't work with the iPad before, and now it does. And it does all the gestures.
With caveats is weird. I don't quite understand why when you connect it, it says like this could interfere with other Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. I don't know why the Magic Trackpad specifically.
The Magic Trackpad 2, I didn't get that at all. And that's the one that works with it. Did you with the Magic Trackpad 2?
No, that's the one I have. Yeah? That's the one I have.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't see that alert, but that alert is mysterious. I don't know what that means.
I mean, it's the one that came with my iMac 5K. Like, it's not an old one. It's only a couple of years old. So
I don't know.
I assume it's
That's a weird caveat to put in there. But I've been loving just the scroll performance is exactly right. You sit there and you're scrolling through a document and with two fingers.
It kind of breaks my brain, Jason. I got to be honest. Like, I was using it a little bit when I updated to the beta, and like, I have this, like, I'm in that in-between state, right, where I have that hesitation between, should I reach for, my hand reaches for the screen because I've gotten so used to doing things that way. No, use the track. But you've got to, like, it's like a Dr. Strangelove-ish, like, forcing the hand back down toward the trackpad. And then you use it, and you're like, wow, this makes a lot of sense, but it's weird. It shouldn't work like this, right? Like, I should be using a Mac if I'm using a cursor or something. But, like, it's not that it works badly. It's just that I am not used to it. So, like, you know, if I spend a week or something doing that all out, I think it would be fine. But right now, it's because we've spent so long with the paradigm being touch that it's going to take a little bit of getting used to, I think, for a lot of people to just reprogram themselves back to the quote-unquote old way of doing things.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you want to really break your brain. You can turn off natural scrolling on the iPad.
Yeah, I saw
so,
it. No.
So,
nope.
So if you're like, hey, you know, really I'm going to use an iPad with a trackpad, but I want it to feel like the Mac in 2008.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. Great.
There
actually
are people who will be very happy about that, weirdly enough.
I think Steve Trotton Smith posted a thing about how he's got like a Mac emulator running on his iPad, like that he's built himself, because you can't put that in the store. And he got it to work with the mouse features that are in the 13.4 beta, and it just turns that iPad into a classic Mac. Like the cursor moves around on the screen and you double click on things and they open. It's just this whole thing. It's amazing. So it's hilarious. And again, you know, people hear about like us talking about cursors and they're like, oh boy, with a cursor talk, like it's just, they're just making it into a Mac again. It's like, well, it's a rethink of the Mac. Like it behaves differently in ways that I think show you that they're trying to rethink what a cursor support looks like in 2020 versus 1984. And I like that about it. And then the key overriding thing anytime I talk about any of this is the beauty of the iPad is the default is that it's a touch tablet and that you use your fingers on it. And all the other stuff is optional, right? The pencil is optional. The keyboard is optional. The trackpad or mouse, optional. You don't need them. You use them if you want to, but you don't need them. And my experience with Surface, to talk about the, there are a bunch of stories about how, oh, Apple admits that Microsoft is right. It's like, well, what was Microsoft going to do? Microsoft's strength was in a desktop operating system. And so they've been trying to push touch on it, and they get rejected because their strength is Windows. And they keep trying. They're on their third, I think, try now with this. And I've got a Surface in the house. It's a Surface Mini, so it's sort of super slow and small and all. But like, Microsoft's trying, but the fact is the weight of Windows and wanting to run Windows apps is so strong that, you know, the only way I can describe it is Surface feels to me like a PC that you can sort of use as a tablet. And Apple's approached it from the complete opposite direction. It's a tablet, and they're trying to make it be able to do more PC productivity things when you want. And they're both headed for the same direction. Even though Apple has been really slow with its pace of iPad development, I think Apple's going to get there first because Microsoft's strength is also its weakness. Microsoft having that library of old software, and they keep trying to drag their user base into thinking more modern about it, but the user base is like, well, no, you don't understand, Microsoft. The only reason we use you is because of legacy, and it's hard for them to get... So it's a lot harder for them to get there. Not that they won't, but like... It turns out that is also a hard task, just like adding this stuff to the iPad is a hard task for Apple.
Tricky, because everybody who's free of that and able to develop new things chips away a little bit at that as they go, right? Like as more and more people use the iPad, Apple loves to talk about all the businesses that are deploying the iPad and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that totally takes out Windows. Obviously, it's still doing fine, but it's going to chip away a little bit. It's going to erode that because Microsoft doesn't have the ability to act as radically and as flexibly as someone like Apple does, who had nothing to lose, right, in that market. Like, they had no pre-existing sort of large-scale enterprise deployments where people were like, no, you can't change that. So, yeah.
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 Yeah, I don't know. Funny, weird world we live in technologically, and then there's the rest of the world, which is super weird right now. So... it's but this would be a weird week anyway, just because of these particular Apple announcements, were it not for the fact that so many people are on lockdown and can't control that part of it at all. Writing the piece yesterday, it's like, first off, it's super hard because everything is distracting. Like, Jamie's college went finally admitted that they were going to be online only for the last term, which means that, her freshman year is basically done and she's going to have to do it remotely. And we're going to have to go up to Oregon and pull her stuff out of the dorm. It's just like an unceremonious end to her freshman year. And so she's really upset about that. And we're all upset about it. And I'm like, I'm trying to write a story here. Plus, it's a new MacBook Air. So I realized that what I need to do before I send this one back, before I wipe it and send it back, is I need to make a disk image or something, or a time machine backup. Mm-hmm. Because setting up all of my apps again so that I can use the thing every time I review a new Mac, it's terrible. And I don't have a workflow for that. So I need to get better at that. And I didn't want to migrate from my old laptop or something, because that takes forever too. I just want to have
Dropbox
and BBEdit and all that. So I think maybe just doing a time machine backup that I can put aside and then restore from that the next time I get one. So, it was a frustrating day. It was hard. And then, but the I guess nice thing about it is, in the end, this MacBook Air, it's like, have you read about the new MacBook Air, the Retina MacBook Air from 18 months ago? And did you read about the keyboard and the 16-inch MacBook Pro? Well, that's about it, right? that is about it. They mention the microphones. You asked me about this and Dolby Atmos support. I haven't.
I just don't know.
What's funny is it's mentioned on their marketing page, on their website, on the MacBook Air or whatever. In the reviewer's guide for this, not to tell tales out of school, but reviewer's guides from Apple tend to be 20 pages long, PDF that you get when you're reviewing a product. The MacBook Air is four. There was not a lot in there. And so, including no mention of the audio system. So I will check and see if it sounds better, and if the microphones are better, or if they're just sort of restating on the existing microphones that are in there.
They made a big deal of that with the 16-inch MacBook Pro when it came out last fall.
I'm not sure they're using similar
technology.
I'm not sure they are. But
it says three mics with beamforming, which I assume is... I looked at the stats and it looked like that's what was on the 16-inch, but
they didn't do is they didn't say studio quality or anything like that, and I'm not sure how many mics were in the old MacBook Air. It may be the same.
It wasn't that many. I did look back. I compared with the old specs, and at least they didn't call it out.
What I find strange is that they didn't in their... Because anything new, and clearly they were grasping for new things in this product, because it's a very familiar product. Doesn't mean it's bad. I think it's great. It is the what we wanted the original Retina MacBook Air to be.
Sure. Yeah.
Because we wanted that keyboard to be different, and that it is now. And you can choose a processor. There's so many good things about it that a lot of people are going to be really happy. But that's a case where it's sort of like, why didn't you mention it then if it was that important? So
and there's
I don't
clearly
know.
There is clearly some cost cutting happening too, right? Because people who have called out the minor quibbles here are the things like, you know, the webcam, the front-facing camera still kind of sucks, right? Like, it's not, it hasn't changed at all.
Hasn't changed.
Yeah, and then...
Yes, in fact, is it on the marketing page? It's like, and there's a webcam. Like,
right,
great.
Exactly.
Yay!
And I thought that there was also a, the new iPad Pro supports 802.11ax, aka Wi-Fi 6, which is the new Wi-Fi standard, which the MacBook does not. So, like, there's a couple places in there clearly where they're like, well, we could put those in, but it would probably, we would lose that $999.
We
got
to hit $999. And clearly, that was the goal, was to hit $999 with this.
Yeah. So, they're still, it's not without its compromises, not to say they're terrible, right? Like, I don't think most people have deployed a Wi-Fi 6 setup, so no one's going to really suffer that much from that except a handful of people.
It's not a MacBook Pro, right?
Yep.
I mean, there's that too. Apple only makes 3 laptops right now. The Air, the 13 Pro, and the 15 Pro or 16 Pro. That's it. So this is that one. This is your $999 laptop. That's what it is.
And do you think, hypothetically speaking, do you think that 14-inch MacBook Pro was also supposed to ship this week? Because it seems weird.
I don't know whether at this point, I can't decide whether that's echo chamber stuff or whether it's real. Like, I know that people said that it was like Waterfield or something did a video where they talked about how you could use the 14-inch MacBook Pro. And it's like, I'm not sure that they knew. I think maybe they just were guessing or hoping.
It makes sense to a certain degree, right? Because they went from they discontinued the 15 in favor of the 16.
But there is...
The 13-inch Pro still doesn't have the new keyboard, which seems weird.
It seems weird. I am surprised that it didn't get announced this week, and it makes me think that there's a reason that may have to do with supply chain. Like, if they're sourcing a new panel that's 14 inches, let's say, then maybe that would be an issue, that there's some part in it that they just can't. Because this MacBook Air, and I you can't see it, but I just touched it. It's right here. It's here with me now, Dan. This MacBook Air is largely the same parts before, plus the new processors and the new keyboard. And the keyboard is a part that they also existing have from the 16-inch. You know, it's not exactly the same, but like, I can see that this is made out of stuff that Apple has already really sort of sourced in the supply chain. And who knows about that 13 or 14, but maybe there's just a piece of it that they couldn't get.
Yeah, I think that's plausible, because I can't see why certainly if it were ready to go, you would just ship it this week. There's no reason
not
to do that. Yeah.
Why not?
Especially when you're releasing the MacBook Air, you know, all of a sudden this is the one that has the better keyboard. Yeah. Anyways, I agree. I feel like there's probably some problem that led to that. So maybe we see that in May or something when the keyboard case ships or whatever.
I was using, because I was running Geekbench tests on all of these computers in my house, and not computers, the MacBook. Jamie has the MacBook. She doesn't have the original. She's got the next year revision of it. So it's a slightly faster processor, but it's still like an M3. It's slow. I really like that computer. Like the it's so thin and light and nice. And it's such a shame that it got discontinued. I'm just going to throw it out there when we're talking about MacBook Air and ARM Max. I don't think there's any way that the MacBook Air is going to ARM in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
I am a ARM MacBook believer. I feel like they're going to take that 12-inch MacBook thing, and that is, it already feels like a prototype for an ARM MacBook.
Sure.
I'm so sad that product doesn't exist anymore. And I feel like it needs to come back. And I think the answer is it needs to have an ARM processor in it for it to be viable, because the Intel stuff is just, they have to crank it down so much in order to get it into that fanless design. And that won't be true. Like, the iPad Pro is fanless. Like, they can do it with an ARM Mac. So I was just reminded as I was using the little 12-inch MacBook, how adorable it is and how I hope that design comes back. I hope we see that familiar face again with ARM inside.
Stick one more USB-C port on it. Just one more.
Would be nice. That would be nice. Well, you know, the iPad, the new Magic Keyboard for the iPad
has
Pro
pass-through,
has a power. So this came up when that got announced. It's got a USB-C question. Port on it. But what it's doing is it's for power pass through. It's not a device thing. It frees up the USB-C on your iPad Pro for devices if you want to attach them. And it's basically giving it a second plug for power. Imagine that, right? Something the MacBook 12-inch did not have. So it's only one for data on the device, but this one for power. And somebody was asking, and I think the Six Colors member Slack, about like, is that a new feature? And the fact is that you have been able to use the smart connector to transfer power both directions, because you have to power the device, right? But you can also charge the device via it. Since the beginning, there is somewhere in a bin here, I have like a Logitech stand for the iPad Pro that attached on the smart connector and very slowly charged it or powered
it. Right. I assume that is a very low amperage voltage. I don't know.
And the new magnetic backs, those smart connectors, it may be capable of more. But I even am reluctant to discuss, and I should probably ask Apple about this, whether I could say it charges it or it powers it.
Yeah, because it's just enough to keep it running, basically.
Right. It may be that if you use that for a full day at a desk doing a lot of intense stuff on an iPad Pro, your battery wouldn't go up, but it would stay charged. Hopefully, your battery wouldn't go down.
Yeah, that seems bad.
Right? So, and I want to ask Apple about that, because that's the real question, is like, if I'm using this iPad Pro to do all this amazing stuff and I'm plugged in via that port, is my battery going to drain, or is it going to be okay? And I think and that is all down to how much power can flow back in via the smart connector. And I should probably ask them about that, because that's a really good question that I don't know the answer to. And, you know, it's not coming until May, so they may not have an answer for me yet. But it's intriguing, though, that that's that second port, and they are trying to view this as a, you know, it's much more desktop-y. The whole... I look back, sometimes you look back and you go, oh, I see what they were doing there. Adding the magnets and stuff, to make it much more strongly attached 18 months ago for the MacBook or for the iPad Pro.
Right.
Like, I look at that thing, that case that's coming out the magic keyboard.
Magic keyboard.
For iPad Pro. And I think they gotta have been thinking about this.
Sure.
From before, right? Like, it works with the old model, right? Like, clearly this kind of product has been in their sights for a while now. A full keyboard trackpad kind of thing. Because it's going to work with the 18-month-old iPad Pro. Like, and it's, I think, down to the fact that they wanted to make it with the magnets so that it'll hold that thing up. Like it does, because otherwise they'd have to redesign it, right? But they already did the design that laid the infrastructure for them to make this thing.
Right, yeah. I mean, and because it's backwards compatible, right? Like, the keyboard works with the previous generation of the iPad Pros. Like, that speaks to the fact that they either were designing with that as the get-go, thinking, all right, we, you know, want to accommodate those things, or they were just like, we got to plan ahead for this.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense. I know we're all fascinated to know about the mechanics of this thing, just because how heavy is it?
How heavy is it?
Keep it cantilevered? Like, will it work in a lap comfortably? Like,
yeah, or is it going to jiggle and wiggle? And
right, so many questions.
I asked them, well, I don't know what I'm supposed to say about it, but I asked an Apple representative about the weight of it, and I did not get... They talked about how their goal was to create a thin light experience, but they did not answer my question.
Well, there's no specs on it. Right?
They acknowledged that they didn't answer it. I think what I was told when I asked directly about the weight of the keyboard was... I think it concluded with some statement like, I know we didn't answer your question directly, but I think we answered it generally. I was like, that's not an answer. That's the definition of not an answer. So we'll see. But I will say, after using iPad keyboards for a while and that bridge keyboard and all that, it's like, it's physics, folks. Like, consult Isaac Newton for the details. You know how much an iPad Pro weighs. Now look where it is. What is keeping it from falling over backward? And the answer is the weight in the front of the keyboard by the trackpad. Like, it's gotta have weight or it will fall over backward. That's why it's hard to do a laptop style configuration on an iPad. Well, and even though they've moved the center of gravity a little bit forward, still it's going to be, it's going to tip over unless you've got weight. So it has to weigh, it has to be heavy, not because they couldn't make it lighter technologically, but because it has to have weight to be balanced.
And that's fascinating because, like, you don't, that is not a design consideration generally in
Apple,
laptops.
We need to make this thing heavier, says Apple. Like, that's what?
Right. Like, are we going to open this, you know, iFixit's going to open it up and be like, there's just weights in here. Like, that'd be a weird, I mean, I, again, understand totally why they have to do it, but wow, that would be strange. yeah, that's, there's a lot of questions. It looks cool. It looks cool, but I'm fascinated to see what the real world, you know, experiences with that end up being, because I think it is a bold move and one that may have some drawbacks that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah. Anything else? Jeez. I feel like, what more could there be?
I mean, there's probably more, but I think, you know, we've talked a lot
already. Yeah, we have. It's a big week. Big week. Well,
it's a big week. There's more going on.
There's, well, we'll calendar willing and able, we'll be back here next week to talk about more things. But until
sounds
then,
like a plan.
I guess what I have to say is, everybody stay safe, stay healthy, stay inside. And hopefully we'll all be here healthy again next week if we do all of those things. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.